Have your Bible. I want to read you a passage of Scripture from the 40th chapter of the book of Exodus. Exodus 40, beginning with verse 34. Exodus 40, 34. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled upon it. And the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. In all the travels of the Israelites, whenever that cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they would set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted. And so the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and the fire was in the cloud by night in the sight of all the house of Israel during all their travels. This is a ram's horn, which I carried with me all through Israel last week and carried it all the way to the top of Mount Sinai and blew it, or attempted to blow it, from the top of Mount Sinai. It's actually the ancient shofar, the Jewish shofar, or ram's horn, which is still used. It's the only one of the ancient musical instruments which is still used in the Jewish synagogue today. When the great synagogue in Jerusalem was opened a couple of months ago, they got an ancient old rabbi to come in and wheeze through the ram's horn, through the shofar, try to make a noise out of it. My friends who were there said that he had a terrible time with it, that he had false teeth, and they but this is the there's all kinds of shofars or ram's horns, but this is the typical one that is used. And it had two particular purposes when it was blown in the ancient days. It was blown to call the people to worship. Whenever there was worship, the ram's horn was sounded. Or if the cloud, which had been over the tabernacle, was not there when they woke up in the morning, the ram's horn was sounded again. Not only was the horn to be sounded to call the people to worship, but it was a call to move. Time to get going. So, and when that thing made a noise across the desert, why, everybody began to fold their tents, and pull their tent pegs up, gather their sheep and goats, because it was an indication that God was moving. Time to go. And so the ram's horn remains. Unfortunately, in the Jewish synagogue, it's only used today to call people to worship, because the synagogue's not going anyplace. It's stopped. But God's people are still to be on the move. And the symbol of the shofar, or the ram's horn, still remains. The symbol of God's people who are on the move, who are not locked down to where they were yesterday. They're not locked down to tradition. They don't have to do it today the way they did it yesterday because it was done yesterday. It's a symbol of God's people who are staying under the cloud of God. Now, the ram or the wild sheep wore this thing until somebody came and took it off of him. I guess they took its brother too and turned it into another ram's horn. But it was used by the Israelites in these basic symbols. Now, there are, as I walked through the Sinai last week, and this was my fifth trip there, I began to realize there's basically three kinds of people who go into the wilderness. We all have our desert experiences. We all have our wilderness experiences. And there's three kinds of people that we find in the wilderness. Whenever you find yourself in your own desert, you probably won't go to the Sinai or to the Negev. You may not go to any desert, physical desert. But everybody goes into spiritual deserts. The spiritual wilderness is a place that everybody goes into. And you're driven into it for the same reason the Israelites were driven into it. You're driven into it because you made some mistakes. That's the reason Moses went to the wilderness. He killed somebody. And there was no place to go except into the desert. And we go into our wildernesses for the same reason. We've goofed up. We've made a mistake. Or we go into it for some kind of circumstances. Somebody else drives us into the wilderness. Or maybe somebody comes along and leads us into the wilderness. Maybe you're on your way to some kind of promised land. If you are, the only way you're going to get there is to go through the wilderness, because there's no way to enter the promised land except through the wilderness. The basic spiritual truth, there's no way to have a resurrection unless you go to a cross first. And so wildernesses are a very vital part of every Christian's life. Now, we got a whole school of theology today that says that there are no wildernesses. The only people who go into wildernesses are people who don't have faith. Well, I don't find God any place telling us that we're to leap over the wilderness. We're to walk through it. Now, he doesn't intend for us to stay in it. But it's part of our growing, maturing process, is the wilderness experience. And there's three kinds of people that live in the wilderness. They're today in the Sinai, there are the Bedouins. Bedouins are people who have lived there all of their lives. They abide in the wilderness. Now, the Bedouins are going someplace, but they're going in circles. They don't ever leave the wilderness. They stay in it. They move from one place to the other. But they don't ever go out. They don't have any goal other than to walk in a circle. I know some folks like that. That's their purpose, is to stay miserable all their life. Now, they don't want to stay in the same miserable condition, so they move from station to station. Station A, be miserable here for a while. Let's move over here to station B. We'll be miserable here. Station C, we'll make a whole lot of people miserable with us when we get over here. And they go in little circles. They're misery people. They're wilderness dwellers. They dwell in the desert. And they have reached this kind of thing of things are never going to get better. It's always going to be bad. We'll just kind of go in circles all the time. Now, nothing wrong with going in circles. Circles are how you learn. The children of Israel went in circles. They went in circles for 40 years, but they finally emerged out of that thing. Circles are fine. It's by routine that we learn. We have to do it over and over and over again. You don't learn it by doing it once. You learn it by doing it several times. You don't learn it by losing money one time. You have to lose lots of money several times before you don't do that crazy thing anymore. Those are the ways we learn. But there's a difference, some of you know, between things that go in circles. Bees go in circles, but bees always come back with honey. There's a difference in a bee and a grasshopper. A grasshopper, he doesn't go in circles. He goes up and down. And he exerts just as much energy as the bee. The difference is that he never goes any place. He's just there all the time, going up and down. Now, the Bedouin people, and there's a lot of Bedouin Christians who are like that. They live in their wilderness. There's a second kind of people that we've discovered in the wilderness. They're not there anymore. And those are the hermits. Back in the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th century, there were hundreds of holy men who moved to the Sinai to seek salvation. Thomas Merton's little book on the Desert Fathers states specifically that these men came to the Sinai to seek salvation. Unfortunately, they didn't understand that salvation was already theirs through Jesus Christ. And they believed that they had to come and live in caves. And so the desert today is filled with hermit caves of where people came and lived out their lives. Some of them living 30 and 40 years in these caves. Some of them deliberately putting themselves in terribly uncomfortable positions in the caves because they believed that the more suffering they went through, the quicker they would find their salvation. Some of them chained themselves in the caves. Some of them moved into caves to where they could neither sit down nor stand up, but they had to stay in a kind of a bent, crouched position. And they lived that way for years, leaning up against the wall to sleep. Now, they died out. They died out after about three centuries down there. And the reason they died out is because people got tired feeding them, because hermits don't produce anything. Hermits are ingrown. Now, they may seek and even see the face of God, but because they have no concept of outreach or outgrowth, they have no concept of learning and then leaving in order to go and teach somebody else. Their whole concept of learning is for self. They died. And the only way they could exist was that people fed them down there. Other folks had to come and take care of them. God does not bless people like this. Now, they may learn something of God. And a lot of us are like that. There's a tendency inside of us to say, if I can just get it for myself, then that's all that's really necessary. But you see, the heart of Jesus is the heart of evangelism. It's always a concept of sharing what you have with somebody else. The only reason you learn is to share it, is to give it away. The only reason you prosper is so that you can use that money for somebody else. The only reason that you pray to have a healthy body is so that you can use your body for something else. And so the hermits died. The Bedouins are still there. They produce nothing. The hermits died out. There's a third kind of people that go through the wilderness. And those are the pilgrims. We'll meet them there. But they are just passing through. They're not there to stay. They're passing through that wilderness in order to get to someplace else. They have a goal out there that they're going through. Now, these are the kind of people that are close to the heart of God. God walks with you through the wilderness. God didn't want you to stay there. God never intended for those children of Israel to go into the wilderness and stay there. He didn't even intend for them to stay there 40 years. He thought they would be there for about 3 or 4 months. And then they would go on immediately and take the lamb that had been promised to them. But because of disobedience and because of fear and many other things, and those of you who know those Bible stories, historical stories, know what happened to them, they stopped. And as a result, they had to stay down there an additional long period of time before that generation died and the new generation that was not afraid anymore came on. There's an old Negro spiritual that sums up the very heart of the Christian life. Some of you remember, I'm just a wayfaring wanderer, a poor wayfaring wanderer passing through this world of sin. The earth is not my home. I'm just a passing through. And that's the concept that God has for us, not only with this earth, but with every desert experience we have, with every wilderness experience, with every dark experience. God does not intend for us to go into that thing and to stay in it. Everybody has moods of depression at one time or another, but God, it's never God's will to go into depression and stay in depression. You go into depression in order that you can come out on the other side. Deserts are not designed to choke the life out of us. Deserts are designed to mold us and to shape us, because here, everything that would keep us from hearing God is stripped from us. And in that desert experience, you hear the voice of God. But if you hear the voice of God aright, that voice is always saying, go, go. The voice is never saying, stay. Every time God speaks to his people, it's an imperative. And he's saying, go, be on the move. And that's the reason for this ram's horn. You see, that's the balance of the Christian life. The balance of the Christian life is to come and see and to go and tell. The balance of the Christian life is worship and evangelism. A church should never just major on one or the other. And a lot of churches do that. All they do is worship. They come together, they have the Eucharist, they have their liturgy. A little group of people that meet, and they meet every day, and they go through their little form of worship, and they stay a little group of people. Then there's other kinds of churches that have fleets of buses, and all they do is go out and just knock on every door, and they bring everybody from all over the community into their church. But when they get there, they don't worship. All they do when they get there is chide the people and instruct them on how to go out and get more people. That's not the purpose of God either. The purpose is a blend or a balance between that kind of thing, of meeting to worship and then going out to share what they learned. That's the symbol of the shofar, to call people to worship and then to let them know that God is a God who is on the move. The cloud is always moving from one section to another. And so we move at God's command. And the purpose of the wilderness is to train us that we can learn God's command. There's an ancient but valid military principle which says that you train men to react instantly at any spoken command. That's the purpose of basic military training. And so military training, whether you're in the Marines or the Army or the Navy or the Air Force or whatever branch of the military you're in, you will learn a certain set of commands. You'll learn a manual of arms. And I can't do a right shoulder arms very well with this horn. But you'll learn a right shoulder arms, and you'll learn to present arms, and you'll learn to go through the whole manual of arms concept, the difference between the two. It's been years since I've done it, and I can still do it. But you learn that, and you learn to do it on command. You learn how to swing that rifle around. You learn how to fix the bayonet on the thing. You learn to march in formation. You learn to do a right column march and a left column march and an eyes right and an eyes left and a stand at attention and a parade rest. And you learn all of those commands, and you learn to do them on commands. That's a basic military procedure. Now, God works through military procedures. And that's the purpose of the wilderness, is so that when God gives a command, you follow it. You don't ask him why. You don't argue with him. You don't say, I want to go left this morning. I don't care if everybody else is going right. Anybody who has stood in formation with a group of shoulders and done a left shoulder arms when everybody else is going right shoulder knows the chaos that kind of thing causes. Sometimes bloodshed when you get hit across the eye with somebody else's gun barrel. God is training his people. He's maturing his people. He's growing his people up. And good soldiers don't question why. They learn to follow the voice of God. And so the whole purpose of that cloud over the tabernacle was a purpose of training. Let's find out when we're going to move. We get our tent down. We get it all settled. And then the next morning, the cloud is moved over the next sand dune. We have to pack everything and put it all together again, get all the kids and the goats and the sheep, and we take off again. The next time the cloud settles down for 6 months, or it may settle down for a year, but you're still going to be obligated every morning when you get up, if you live in the wilderness, to go outside and look up and see if the cloud is still there. And then you learn to listen, because someplace over on some high mountain peak, there's somebody getting ready to blow this horn and saying, the cloud is moving. Let's get under it as we go. That's the greater purpose of the cloud, is to keep our eye on God and to learn to look up. And so the wilderness is a school. The desert is a school. And those of you who are in some kind of desert this morning, you're in a school situation. And you're in there to grow. And you're growing. Somebody says, well, the only growing I'm doing is I'm growing discouraged. Well, if you'll walk and if you'll stay with it, you'll find that discouragement is just one of the steps you take. And you're going to come out on the other side. The true pilgrim is moving. That's the reason that the service this morning, one of the reasons I'm sure the service this morning was different. So easy to get into a rut. Saying this is the way we're always going to serve communion. This is the way we're always going to have praise and worship. This is the way we're always going to have ministry. And God is saying, as a corporate group as well as individuals, I don't want you in a rut. I want you to be able to listen to me on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. Hear me. Do what I have for you to do, because as you learn to obey me and follow me, I will bless your life. I will lead your paths. I will guide you, and I will protect you. Peter Marshall, in one of his famous sermons before the U.S. Senate, struck at the heart of this whole concept of staying behind. And he prayed a prayer of materialism and non-materialism. I want to read it to you. And he prayed this. Peter Marshall was the chaplain of the United States Senate for a number of years. And he prayed, "Forbid it, Lord, that our roots become too firmly attached to this earth, that we should fall in love with things. Help us to understand that the pilgrimage of this life is but an introduction, a preface, a a training school for what is to come. Then shall we see all of life in its true perspective. Then shall we not fall in love with the things of time, but come to love the things that endure. Then shall we be saved from the tyranny of possessions, which we have no leisure to enjoy, or property whose care becomes a burden. Give us, we pray, the courage to simplify our lives. Give us, we pray, the courage to simplify our lives. We climbed Mount Sinai, 12 of us, 12 men, and a Jewish guide who was with us. Spent two nights on the mountain, sleeping there. We had anticipated that it would be extremely cold because Mount Sinai is 7,500 feet. And we had thought that it would be very cold, but the Lord provided balmy nights and clear skies, and it was just absolutely beautiful. One afternoon, we spent a whole afternoon at a high mountain oasis that's called a farsh. Called Elijah's Farsh. It's the place that tradition says that Elijah went when he fled into the wilderness to Mount Sinai. And there, at that small little oasis, at about the 6,500 foot level up the mountain, Elijah paused and God spoke to him. Wind, earthquake, and fire passed by, and finally God spoke in a still small voice. But we spent one afternoon there, and our guide, eager to show us some things. We had the camera crew from the 700 Club and all these big cameras and tripods and everything that had lugged up the mountain using camels. And our guide wanted to show us a particular overview. I had been there once before, a number of years ago, back off the side of the mountain. But if you leave this high mountain oasis, which is a kind of a pocket, about two-thirds of the way up Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is utterly without vegetation. It's just rock, all rock. And here's a place to where there's some grass and some springs and some small trees. And if you leave this and climb back through the rocks about a quarter of a mile, you come to an extremely high precipice that overlooks a deep wadi where St. Catherine's Monastery is located. St. Catherine's Monastery is the oldest existing monastery in the world today, Greek Orthodox monastery. And it's right there in the heart of the Sinai. And I knew that he was taking us back there. The other fellows had not been, and I was excited about it because I did not remember how to get there, having been there once before. But you have to climb up on some very steep rocks, and then it's a sharp precipice that falls off almost 3,000 feet, and it's almost vertical, right down on top of this monastery, which is located in a very narrow canyon or wadi down below. As we got to the place to where we would climb up, to where we could see our overview, and we were carrying all this equipment because we were going to set our cameras up on top of this, and the guide got very concerned about us. We had three men in the group who were not pulling the mountain very well. They were older, and they were not in very good physical shape, and we had done a lot of heavy mountain climbing. And they were not making it very well. And he was concerned about them because they were slipping on several occasions. And at this particular place, if you slipped once, you didn't slip anymore. That was the end of it. And they'd pick you up down below in the Greek monastery, about 3,000 feet. It's just unbelievable scenery there. And as we got to this rock, somebody had come along and had built a huge wooden cross on the top of this overlook rock so that you can see it from down below. When you're at the monastery, you can look up at the mountain, and there's this wooden cross stuck in these rocks high up, and it's about a 6-foot cross that's out there. And as we were climbing up the back side of this in order to get to where we could see the overview down below, our Jewish guide, interestingly enough, looked back and he saw a couple of these guys who were really having trouble climbing this mountain. And he said, "Fellas," he said, "if you look down, you're lost." He says, "The only way you can climb this mountain is to keep your eye on the cross. And everybody said, yeah, like that, you know, because it really was a scary kind of place to be. And there was a lot of loose rock. That was the problem. And I was always afraid that you'd put your foot and the foot would slide out from under you and down you would go. And literally, the only way you could climb that mountain was to keep your eye on the cross. And I realized the basic truth of that. That's the truth of the Christian life. I know it was strange for some of you what we did this morning. Come down here. Some of you have never been prayed for before. Some of you have never had anybody come along and lay hands on you before. You've been to church, maybe. And you may have received communion, but you've never done what we did before. That was a traumatic experience. That's a slippery experience for some of you, especially when you're standing next to somebody that the Spirit of God touches and suddenly they're not there anymore. And you're next. And you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I understand that it's a scary kind of experience. Somebody has forced you. It's your turn. You're in the row. You can't get out of it. You have to come march down here. You have to stand here. And along comes somebody who's going to lay hands on you and touch you. And about half the people are hitting the floor when that happens. And you don't know what's going on. But God had a purpose in that. And I want to close with this. God had a purpose in what we were doing. He had a purpose in that cross this morning. He wanted to bring you to it. Now, I realize that we've run way over time this morning. But I want you to know that God has a purpose in your life. Nobody this morning is here by accident. Everybody is here on God's purpose. He has brought you here. And He doesn't want you to leave this place the same as where you were. There's a horn blowing in your life. Whether you know it or not, there's a shofar that's being sounded in every life here this morning. And God is saying, your cloud is moving. Now stay under it. Don't stay back behind and be a hermit or wander as a Bedouin. Stay under it. Because I've got something planned for you out there in the future. Now you'll never find it if you resist. The only way you'll find it is to say, yes, sir. And when the commander speaks, you go forward. And you stay under that cloud.